Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health and nutrition in today's modern world. Joining me from lovely Southern California are the husband and wife research and writing team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Hello to both of you.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Manny, I know that you're a fast car enthusiast. I heard the best story from a reporter friend of mine in Florida. An 82-year-old woman received a speeding ticket. It was over $1,000. And the headline read, 82-year-old clocked at 29 miles an hour faster than her age.
Wow.
Wow.
Tell me, does she date younger men? I'm proud of her. Somebody has to do it.
Oh, I'm just having a fit over here with that one, but that's okay.
I just thought you'd get a chuckle out of that.
You know, and I have to, because I love picking up the paper, the sports section, and looking at the latest famous athlete stopped for going over 100 miles an hour in his Ferrari or some other exotic car. There's something about these things, you know. It's like watching a movie. You go sit in these cars, and the guy morphs into a different personality, and off they go. I guess it happens to women over 80, too. Of course, did they say what she was driving?
No, it didn't. The details were very sketchy.
I'm sure it wasn't a Prius.
I want to know what. Well, at any rate, I don't. We'll talk about that later.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've given up food for speeding.
I don't think so. Oh, my gosh.
As always, our phone lines are open, and we do welcome your questions and comments. The number to call is area code 646-378-1120. Alternatively, if you're too shy for calling in, you're welcome to ask your questions in our chat room. Earlier this week, I was talking to a friend of mine. He runs a website. It's kind of news-oriented, and he's contemplating starting to do some radio programs. And one question he had for me was, where would he find interesting and knowledgeable people to talk with? In fact, he specifically cited Manny and Ashley. He went even further. He's done a little bit of research. He said, look, Manny's a retired attorney and Ashley's a nurse. How come they know so much about this subject? And I thought, what a great question. In fact, that's the question that I want to start today's program with. Let's wind the clock back to 1997. And would one of you like to tell us the story?
Yeah, well, first, before I do, I would like to point out that almost all of us in life do what we have to do. We learn what we have to do. We get out of high school because we have to. You go to college because you're scared to death you can't earn a living and you don't want to do something else. And invariably, every time there's a test, you study because you have to study because you've got to pass that test to move on. And as you go through life, life gives you different tests. If you go to work for a chemical company, you're forced to learn everything to do there. So again, you're forced to learn something. Well, when you confront death and you confront life problems, as I did, I got up one day and realized I couldn't get an answer from anyone else. And again, in my life, like everyone listening, I was forced to do something. So the knowledge I received because my back was against the wall. The doctors told me I had 2 years to live. And I either could look at them in the face, go to their office, take their drugs, and die, or I was forced to learn something new and something that they didn't want to tell me. And that's what happened. But the journey itself, I'm going to leave to Ashley.
In 1997, Manny, the first surgery, they said, oh, he's perfectly fine. We removed some tumor, but it's just fine. I looked at the picture of the tumor and said, what are they talking about? This thing in every book I've ever seen looks like cancer. They said, oh, no, we just ripped it out. Don't worry about it. And I'm exaggerating on the surgical terms, but that's kind of how the vision is when you see it looking back. So then after that first surgery, they came in rushing in the door, you know, within 2 days and said, oh, you know, we really made a mistake. That really was cancer. So we can either, since we've taken this thing and dragged it through your whole body, we're going to now have to worry about the cancer metastasizing. That's basically in a nutshell. Now, they didn't say that, but because of my knowledge as a nurse, I know that's the truth.
And part of it is they didn't bother to, they cut it into pieces.
Right.
So they couldn't tell whether it went through the stem of the tumor into my body. So they were just absolutely blind, dumb, and stupid, frankly, at the end of it.
So they then said, we have to do the surgery, but the part that we're taking out, Manny won't miss. This is just, you know, it's kind of like a drying mechanism in the intestine. Don't worry about it. Well, you know, I'm in this room in panic thinking metastasis cancer, and I'm determining this is a doctor. This is, now I have to rely on this doctor. And these doctors who are specialists coming in saying, yeah, this is the only way we can take care of this cancer. So they then go in for an 8.5-hour surgery. And they remove 10 feet of his intestine. And they do a little hack and job, you know, cut and job. And they're like bragging about how great it is because they have this wonderful technique that they go in and punch into the stomach and they don't have to split open the person. And this is a much better technique. 8.5-hour surgery later. So, of course, Manny comes out of surgery, and I had suggested this kind of drip that, you know, you push the drip and you don't have any pain because you're on morphine. So he's coming out of surgery saying, oh, honey, that wasn't so bad. Well, we, you know, and the nutritionist comes in, and, you know, days later, and they figure out, you know, all Manny needs is this general diet, and he's perfectly fine.
By the way, I want to point out, I came out of surgery so high, I passed two astronauts circumnavigating the globe. And that's why I thought I was fine.
So then they send a nutritionist in, and this nutritionist says, oh, you know, he's perfectly fine. You know, don't worry about that body part, okay? So and then the surgeons are all saying, don't worry about it. And, you know, we still have to watch him for the metastasis that, you know, could occur over the next 5 years. You know, we're going to have to constantly screen him for this. And that's the worst. I'm thinking, that's the worst that could possibly be. So we get Manny home. I put him on the diet the nutritionist advised. But I also, because I had myself had been through chemotherapy in my 20s, realized that that's not good enough. I have to do juicing. So I go over to Whole Foods, and I get a nutrition book, and I go through the nutrition book, and I get the latest updates, and I find some juicing books on Heinemann and various books that I had used in my 20s and have moved on since, and started juicing using cantaloupe juice because that was the best thing to heal the intestine along with aloe vera and all these various herbs that went specifically for him.
And she made me drink it.
But he wouldn't drink the cantaloupe juice if he knew something was in it. So I would sneak into the kitchen, juice it, throw the stuff in that I, this, you know, my witch's brew, and I thought, well, this is going to make him better. Well, he'd feel somewhat better, but he was so crippled with arthritis, and it went into Crohn's and gout. And no matter what he ate, he could not break it down or process it. But nobody said that at the time. They all said, this is just part of who Manny's always been. Or I would get an elusive kind of diagnosis, and everything's going to be fine. And we would go out to eat, and by the end of or during the meal, he would almost pass out or just be so sick that he'd be back in bed until he was in a wheelchair. And the wheelchair then would be, oh, every 2-3 months, then it became every couple weeks. And no matter how much juicing I did, no matter how we tried to adjust the diet, we could not find any answers. So the doctor said at that point, Manny's going to lay down, and he's just not going to wake up. And that's what you have to deal with. Okay? End of story. I mean, it's like, so, you know, end of story for you. That's the good news I'm getting. So then I said to Manny, you know, no one gives an S about you but you. And I mean that about each one of us individuals. People go about their lives. The doctors go on with their lives to the next patient, the next room, the next surgery. The person you love goes into the next, running to the market, running to their affairs. Everybody goes. And you yourself are there in the chair looking at your life saying, how do I improve and make my body work? And by doing that, Manny, who's, thank God, maintained some of his brilliance, just kidding, honey, he then went to...
I know she's just kidding.
He decided he would go to medical school online. Now, this is during a day or two that he's really good, and when he's good, he's online looking at medical schools, and he comes to me and says, you know, I think I made a discovery. I discovered there's a thing called enzymes, and somehow there's this lock-key sort of mechanism, and I think that's what I need. So he starts adding enzymes to his body. Slowly but surely, one by one, he adds this. And we start also this elimination diet simultaneously or shortly after. But what happened is we discovered that the same thing Manny was looking at, his discovery, was 130 years worth of research. 130 years of enzyme research is done, and not one medical doctor, nowhere in any school that I went to, ever taught me about enzymes. And it is the key to life. You cannot get pregnant without perfect enzymes in your body. You cannot have functioning organs without perfect enzymes in your body. Nothing functions. Your brain won't function. In fact, people die when there's not enough enzymes in their body. So Manny was dying a slow death because he was actually having malabsorption, malnutrition. He could not absorb any nutrition that was going into his body. Now, how do you fix that, Simon? If you keep throwing the same food and keep doing the same thing you used to do when you were healthy before cancer or before arthritis or before anything else you had, and this goes across the board, it doesn't matter what the name of the illness is. Every single illness goes back to the enzymes. There are 50,000 that you're born with, a bank. They estimate 50,000. There's a bank of them when you're born. So you get this cheery, wonderful bank when you're born. And you go to the bank, your food goes to the bank, and everything goes to the bank so that you can absorb and utilize everything you put in your body. As you get older, there's no longer this bank, and your bank runs short. So you're broke. Manny was broke. And a broke part of his body, or broken part of his body, both are the same at this point, needed these enzymes. Now, again, whether it's fibromyalgia, whether it's arthritis, whether it's gout, whether it's, you know, cancer, no matter what it is. In fact, Manny, tell them about Dr. Kelly with the enzymes.
Well, in terms of what happened is this dentist, Dr. Kelly, well, actually there's two Dr. Kellys. I found an article by Dr. Kelly, Gregory Kelly, on an enzyme called bromelain. It was 50-some pages long. I said, what the heck is this? And I started reading it, and it told stories about how boxers take bromelain before a fight, and that's how they get over black eyes. If they don't take it, it takes them 3 to 4 weeks. If they take it, they're over black eyes in 3 to 4 days. So I'm going, oh, my goodness. I mean, am I the last person to figure this out? So the deeper I got into it, I found it was one of those little cult status things where everybody who really had to deal with pain or some variation of this knew the answers, and the rest of us didn't. And I was really, really shocked.
But Dr. Kelly with the teeth.
Oh, the other.
I was talking about him.
Well, there's another Dr. Kelly who was a dentist in the early 50s who one day was also diagnosed with the same kind of illness I had, and he got sick of the doctors, so he started studying, and he found that enzymes solved his problem. So he stopped being a dentist to save his life, and along the way came up with a cancer cure, which was essentially taking huge doses of enzymes, which is one of the things we recommend in our books, and he stopped cancer cold. Well, he began to preach that if people stop taking chemotherapy and take enzymes, et cetera, that they could improve their health and find a new life. Well, sadly, this got in the way with the medical establishment, and among other things, they tried to poison him. They actually tried to kill this guy because they didn't like what he was saying. They managed to get him disbarred because, after all, he was a dentist, and God help us if a dentist have a theory that's not accepted by the National Association's period, doctors, AMA, et cetera. So a number of years later, Dr. Gonzalez, who was in the graduate portion of his medical studies, was sent to check him out to see if there was any truth to it, and it became his project. So after spending a long period of time in Texas studying this guy, came to the conclusion he was right. And basically, this did stop cancer, and it was a very effective choice. He became a believer, and in recent years, he has been also persecuted by the medical associations because of his views. They think it's basically if you preach any kind of alternate view in health, you are somehow a quack. The only views you're allowed to advance are the views accepted by the medical industry. So there were a lot of people who basically disagreed, but the fact is if they spoke, they were penalized. And that's a sad commentary also.
In fact, when we started doing this, one of my biggest fears was, I'm an RN, I can't go out telling people, so I can only say to people, I can suggest doing these supplements, but to really look at the material that we have supplied within the books, because we back it 100%. I mean, every one of these, in fact, when Manny first told me, we were in bed when he first said, you know, I think I made this discovery. I'm like laughing to myself going, yeah, here's this lawyer. Okay, honey. Okay, boo-boo, you know. So I jump out of bed and I go look in the computer. And
by the way, you can tell we've been married a long time because we're laying in bed. I tell her something and she looks at me like I'm crazy. Well, Simon, isn't that the first incidence of being married a long time?
Yes, it is. It happens to me frequently.
So with this, of him starting this whole thing and me getting over my initial fear, which like is not, it's not part of the establishment. And the only time I ever heard of enzymes were, you know, you take them for your digestion. Oh, okay, big deal, you know. But then, you know, 4,000, it's actually now over 4,000 research articles and books and treatises that we have studied and gone through and checked and double-checked all the numbers and everything and the research on it to know that, you know, what is the first thing in line of everything is your digestion. But in addition to that, every part of your body has different enzymes, which are never discussed, really. And so the supplements that we have spent a long time putting together are specific to all working together and to help your system to heal itself. Because the main thing is, how do you get your body to heal itself if it doesn't have what it needs? So its bank is empty. How are you going to get that money back in your bank? And in this instance, it's your enzymes. Your enzymes are going to get that to restore all the loss of the years or any illness. And the great thing about learning about these enzymes is also with people on medication, it increases the absorption rate. So people get more of their medication. So everything works no matter what, you need these enzymes. And then, oh, Simon, then from there, Manny is still having times where I'm thinking, oh, okay, we found it. This is it. This is all we need, okay? So then we started this before, but it wasn't working without the enzymes. And it was one by one figuring out what food was making him so sick that he would pass out, literally pass out. He would eat a French fry and pass out. And you go, oh, my God, here's this guy with Crohn's. Well, nobody's saying you have Crohn's, don't eat French fries. They're just saying, you know, you're not going to miss this body part. So, you know, just, you know, I have the Fibber McGee's closet. We'll just kind of go in there and throw a few things out, and no one will miss it, you know. So, at any rate, then we start eliminating the food, but it wasn't enough. The discovery with genetically modified organisms and what had been done to adulterate our food was the final straw of getting him well. And I've talked before to you, Simon, about how I went in, a friend of ours came back from Spain and said, you know, Europe is not using our spices. So we look up spices. Not only are they, a lot of them genetically modified, and I'll get into, I have a new discovery with that one this week too, Simon, I want to share with you. I'm like, ah. So not only are they genetically modified, but they're also, and filled with pesticides and herbicides, they also have MSG in a lot of them. So there's hidden MSG within your spices. I threw them all out. I only use organic spices, and we went 100% organic. He has not been in bed since, and he's no longer, I mean, he's been in bed, of course, to sleep. In fact, he's sleeping better than ever. He couldn't sleep before. He would get maybe 1 or 2 hours sleep a night. Now he's sleeping a full 5, 6 hours at a time, which is amazing. And it got down to the food. The food combined with the enzymes combined with vitamins, specific vitamins, made to help replenish his body and allow him to use the nutrients that he was taking in. And as a result of it, he didn't want to eat as much. So what happens, a person eats more because the food they're taking in is not nutritionally satisfying, as in it's satisfying the taste buds, but it's not satisfying the body's needs. So he lost 70 pounds along the way because he had gained all this weight since he couldn't absorb or was in malabsorption, malnutrition. He could not take in and use what he was bringing in, so he was just blowing up like a balloon.
I think it's fair to say, though, that what you're saying is you're not trying to replace modern medicine. You're more looking at supplementing it.
Yes, exactly.
Or in some cases, modern medicine really doesn't address the problem, so you're really forced to look for a solution yourself. So in these cases, it wasn't that I was rejecting modern medicine. It wasn't cutting it. It just wasn't giving me answers to my health problems. So I had a choice of sitting there in the dark and just suffering till I died or finding a solution.
It was horrible. The experience was horrible. We had to handicap the entire house. At a drop of a moment, he would be in bed for 3 to 4 weeks. And couldn't get up to go to the bathroom. It was so bad. And what gets me infuriated is knowing that no one in the medical profession could allow us to get him healthy. The misinformation, the lack of information, the jumbling of information from specialist to specialist. And one of the lessons I learned about specialists is they only look when you go in at a specific organ. They don't look at your body as a complete thing that works together. So when they go into they look at your engine, they go, you know, I only study carburetors, so that's all I know about. So you have a perfect carburetor. I don't understand why your engine isn't running. It's not my problem. Move on. So not one single of these specialists figured out for us how to make all of the system work together. And in fact, looking back, if I knew then what I now know, first of all, I don't think he would have ever had cancer because he would have been, you know, his background history, when I go back even to his teens, I could take his history and go back and we could actually pinpoint when he actually was having problems back then, which meant it was a genetic problem with him. And had we done that and got him on enzymes back then as a teen, never allowed him genetically modified organisms because his body absolutely cannot handle it. And in fact, people themselves can't handle the genetically modified. Then he would never have had cancer, and he would never have needed the surgery. He would have saved, well, it's actually 14 years of his life. So our goal in writing these books is to hopefully help other people to not have to go through what we've gone through. And for those who are going through it, to help them on a better path, because it's in the food. I mean, everything you eat is an important nutrient, is an important supplement to your body. And we start viewing that food as supplements to your body, and then what do you need to help you break down that supplement that you need, then your body will start functioning better. And it affects everything. It affects your brain. It affects how much toxins are allowed in your body. It affects everything.
Well, one of the things that I perceive is going on, and I'm going to use my wife as the example.
Hi, Jan.
Does Jan know this? No, but she'll be out here in a second to beat me over the head with a frying pan.
Okay, the talk
mouse. Right. No, I mean, She goes to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, this is easy to fix. You know, here's a prescription, take two of these every day, you'll be fine. A week goes by, and she's not fine. So back to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, well, what you need to do is also take two of these every day, you know, and it builds up. I have no clue how many pills a day she takes, but it's not helping. They're addressing the symptom, not the cause.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that, in fact, that addressing with Manny ended up with him having a heart attack, and the heart attack that he had was brought on by prescription drugs. And then, of course, this opened an entire broke illusions for me with medicine, because then I had to start going in and looking at medicine from a different point of view and the medication from a different point of view. And as we looked at Vioxx, Bextra, and Celebrex, Celebrex, by the way, has never been tested. And so the doctors who put him on these didn't know this, because the doctor who tested it, who is now in jail, never had subjects to test the medicine. And so it opened a new window for me, saying medical doctors can lie? How can that be? How can a medical doctor go to medical school and spend all that time to lie? How can that happen? And it turns out that a lot of the testing that's done on these medicines are actually paid for industry. So the industry is trying to get their billion-dollar project out there. It's paying for the test. And who knows how accurate these tests are. So, and it turns out a lot of these drugs are all based on enzymes. So they are synthetically made in the lab, not the natural ones. Your body doesn't know how to handle them. The body then is fighting what's ever going on, because you're putting in a fake enzyme in your body. And then you have all these side effects. And you're right, Simon. Who knows? And you don't know with polypharmacy, because you're mixing all these different pills together that have never been tested together in a lab.
Yeah, we know someone who's elderly who's now taking 18 prescriptions a day. I'm surprised he can find the bathroom when he's standing.
And he can't. His wife has now hired somebody to go in and look after him, because he can't find a bathroom.
Oh, goodness. I'm curious. You said Celebrex, and I believe that's a drug I've heard of in this household. Pardon?
Oh, I hope not. Celebrex.
Jen just piped up. I take that.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Well, let me offer you some thoughts about Celebrex. This is how I had a heart attack. My arthritis became so severe, my feet started to look like volleyballs. I couldn't stand upon them. I couldn't even let them touch the sheets. I was sleeping with my feet hanging over the end of the bed, because it was just too painful to allow them to touch the bed. So doctor looked for ways to make it better. So he started giving me a variety of different drugs. Little did I know that none of them...
Or recommending a shorter bed.
Yes.
He's going to sleep in the kiddie condo.
Right. So as we move along with this, he... you know, basically started experimenting with different medicines. And I thought, gee, you know, maybe we'll find something that'll cure this. What I didn't know, and he didn't tell me, and I'm still criticizing him personally for it, is that these things were basically painkillers, and they had nothing to do with whether my health was going to improve. It was just relief from pain. Well, they were Vioxx, Celebrex, and Bextra were the most common ones. The first time I took Celebrex, I doubled over in pain. The second time I took it, I was in bed and I was passing blood. So I go to the doctor and I say, the doctor, who, by the way, is a 25-year friend of mine and a long-time client, and I say to him, what the heck is happening to me? And he says to me, oh, you're being a sissy. You'll get over it in a couple of days. Well, about a couple months later, along comes a little statement on the evening news that, and then in their commercials, if you have any kind of Crohn's, et cetera, you can't take a sulfitamide, which is the essential ingredient in it. And I go, you mean they're admitting that people like me should not take this drug that they're all recommending I take? So they finally figured out, because they really hadn't done any testing on it, that, gee, you know, maybe some people shouldn't take this drug. So then he moved me over to Vioxx. Well, Vioxx caused some weird things, and I said to him, I don't think this is a good drug for me. And he said, well, it's either that or you don't walk. Well, I mistakenly said, well, I don't see anything wrong with the testing to be okay. Maybe I will get over it. Well, I didn't. One night.
And we had an argument about this, too, Simon.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
This was like, I kept saying, you can't take this drug. Look at you. Oh, I can't walk if I don't take it. It was a big argument about this drug.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, nobody wants to lay in bed and be absolutely worthless for long periods of time. And, you know, I don't know anyone who wants to be in bed. Yeah. So anyway, make a long story short, one night I go to bed, and of course it's a late Friday night, I think it was, like 11, 12 o'clock at night. My heart starts pounding up to a couple hundred beats a minute. And at that point I said to Ashley, you know something, honey, if I'm going, I'm going to die in my bed. I'm not going to the ER and go through what I know they're going to put me through. Because if this is what it seems like, I'm toast, and that's it. I'll accept it. I actually was shocked to wake up about 5 or 6 hours later, but I was also shocked to find I couldn't lift my arms or anything. I was just so exhausted and gone. So, of course, the doctor, a very famous doctor who did the surgery on Phil Jackson, a lot of famous athletes, and I'm sorry, I've known him a long time, but he's got to live with this too, basically said to me, oh, Manny, he said, you just have a thickened heart, and it's not a big deal. Go away in a couple of years. It's not caused by Vioxx. It's absolutely impossible for Vioxx to give you a heart attack. I said to him, you know, Phil, I know my body, and I know this gave me a heart attack. Ah, you know, typical doctor, you know. Ah, you don't know what you're talking about. You didn't go to med school. Ah, you know. So I got shuffled off to Buffalo. So at the end of the day, now all of a sudden people are dropping like flies, and it's funny because in those days I was in somewhat of a stock-related business, and I said to some of the guys who worked for us who did investments that, hey, you better short their stock because I'm telling you this is going to come out and it's going to be really ugly. And sure enough, it came out and what was going on was really ugly. And it turned out this doctor, his name's Scott Rubens, worked at Bayview Hospital.
No, please look him up. Scott Rubens.
Sponsored by, you know, a Harvard-run facility. And he had done all these tests. Well, it turned out the Rubens was after the money, and he basically didn't do the test. He basically forged everybody's name as another doctor's of the hospital's reports and used it to fund this report. But at the same time, it turned out, although the makers of Vioxx deny that this is true, that they had a pretty good idea or just flat out knew the truth of their drug. And I personally believe, for reasons of greed and otherwise, they just flat out knew the truth and they just didn't want to tell anybody because they had launched a billion-dollar drug. So at the end of the day, they suppressed this information and then denied it as long as they could get away with it. In the meantime, you know, people are basically dropping like flies. So I think they claim that around 50,000 people died. The reality is it's between 120,000 to 140,000 people. Why do we believe in the higher number? Because when the elderly die or beyond a certain age from any one of these illnesses or anything in general, they don't wake up and go. They basically, attribute it to old age, and partly because doctors don't want to take the risk of blaming a drug. So if a doctor's looking at a guy who goes, you know, I'm sure he died of Vioxx or Celebrex, he's looking at going, boy, do I want to put on a death certificate? Because if I do, that family is going to sue the manufacturer, and I'm going to have to show up in court and be a witness, and they're going to attack me because I said this. So out of caution, or as the word cowardice, doctors never take a stand. They're so afraid of the industry. And believe me, they should be, because this industry will come down on them like a ton of bricks. So here we are, you know, in a situation where they suppress everything, deny everything, and they're still to this day, and I'm sure if a representative of Merck and Pfizer are listening right now, they're going, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Well, I'm sorry. Until you have this health problem, you don't know what you're talking about. There's that old expression, don't criticize somebody till you walk a mile in their shoes. And not one of these doctors has taken one step in one sick person's shoes. So any listener that right now should say to himself, you know, I'm going to ask my doctor, have you ever had this illness? Have you ever taken any of these drugs? Well, you know, what do you know about this stuff? Because the truth is, all they know is what the drug company salesman tells them between patients. And I know. I've been in doctor's offices in my career since day one, represented hospitals, medical clinics, and I've seen what I call the industry whores. And excuse me, I hate to make this reference, because they like to hire beautiful women, because after all, what's the best way to get a doctor's attention? Put a beautiful woman in his hallway when he's bored and busy with patients. So they use these beautiful women who are basically pandering drugs and are functioning on the edge of economic prostitution.
Oh, Manny, please. Okay.
Oh, it is. Come on. I've watched
no, I've rather
my career. And I've watched them go, here, doctor, here's a perk. Do this. Go do this at our expense. And we know someone in the industry, I'll leave nameless, because he certainly wouldn't want his name attached to this, that throughout the years specialized in taking these doctors to famous restaurants in Los Angeles. One of them actually joked once that, you know, he brings us so much business, we ought to put his picture up on the wall along with the famous celebrities. And that's how much they basically do. So at the end of the day, these doctors are fed, you know, and by the way, at the end of the evening, he'd give them these very expensive gift certificates. So at the end of the day, these people were receiving huge benefits from the drug company. So what do you think they did? They just kept right on prescribing.
And with Celebrex, it dovetailed. The Celebrex was a dovetail. How do you say that, Manny? Legally dovetailed into the...
You know, Grant, what happened is they have a funny thing at the FDA that defies reason. If your competitor's drug is passed, as in Vioxx on the bigger test, and Celebrex said, well, we have the same drug. It's a COX-2 inhibitor, if we want to be technical about it. So, therefore, if that one's good, then ours is good. And the FDA goes, oh, yeah, good idea, because they have no interest in banning these drugs or stopping their use. So, at the end of the day, really nothing happened in terms of approval and tests on Celebrex. And then when Vioxx tests were found to be fraudulent, nobody went, oops, if Vioxx is fraudulent, gee, what are we doing about the Celebrex test? Because Celebrex relied on the bigger test, which is the Vioxx test. So basically, you take away one and it undermines the other.
But Celebrex now, just like a cigarette, has a warning. So it says, you know, you could have a heart attack on the Celebrex, but hey, you've been warned, which means it's your responsibility. If you're taking that medicine and you have a heart attack, too bad. I mean, that's basically what they're saying. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me how the medical establishment has become run by these, you know, business people who have no idea or any care about human beings. And they can't. You can't possibly have it. Because if you did, they would have pulled, like, Celebrex off. Oh, and to make matters worse, Simon, during this time with the heart attack with my husband, my father is dying. He's fallen, and he's dying. And I, within 24 hours, I didn't know my brother took charge of health, he would work perfect with the drug companies. He has no heart. But that's a different subject. He allowed the doctor to put my dad on Bextra. Bextra being Vioxx, Bextra, Celebrex. Within 24 hours, my dad went into complete renal failure with nobody in the hospital noticing. I went in that day, I said, oh my gosh, my dad's all disoriented. And they're saying, oh yes, your poor dad's dying. I feel his tummy and I go, oh my God, he's so distended. He hasn't voided. He hasn't gone pee. So they had put a bag on him, and within a matter of moments, he put out 1,000 cc's of urine and didn't stop. Because he, and I got Dexter to be stopped.
And by the way, 1,000 cc's is a liter or about 33.1 ounces. So in essence, he peed a quart.
So and
I'll tell you what, that would give you bragging rights at the local bar.
I was thinking the same thing.
And unfortunately, he wasn't drinking a beer or two to enjoy it, you know. So Baxter had sent my dad into renal failure and an early demise. I mean, I couldn't get the nursing home to do anything otherwise. They kept him on Baxter in the nursing home because at one point they saw it, and it was just horrible. It's a horrible Vioxx Bextra, and anybody on Celebrex, I shake in my boots every time somebody says, I'm on Celebrex. I just want to go, well, okay, you've got the warning. The warning is, you know, you could have a heart attack. So the bottom line is figuring out the symptoms the person's having, how do they relate to, how is my body not functioning properly? What do I need to do to get my metabolism to work, to get my organs working properly? And as you break down every single thing you put into your mouth, because your body, we have not evolved enough to break down the chemicals that are in the system. So that's one of the big things. And then, oh, and I have another new thing. But go ahead, Simon.
Okay. A question that I might have asked you before, but not sure. Your first book. You talk about gout, arthritis, Crohn's, IBD, IBS, and inflammation in general. Are they all interrelated?
Absolutely all interrelated. And that was the point of what I was trying to say earlier, that you take something in your body, and your body says, oh, my God, what is this? So, or oh my gosh, we're on the radio. Oh my gosh, what is this? So then it doesn't know what to do with it, and it causes inflammation because it can't break this chemical down. Because your body's defenses get kicked in, and the body tries to, you know, not allow this chemical you put in to harm it. So then one thing leads to another. The inflammation goes into the heart, goes into the liver, goes into the pancreas. The pancreas, the poor little islets of Langerhans can't break down the sugar that's going in with it because it's chemical. And you've got all these organs within your body trying to stop that toxic ingredient that you've put into it. And no matter how hard it tries, when you bombard it all day, taking more and more and more and more and more and more and more of these chemicals and over and over and over again, your body's defenses then kick up. So if we had to redo this book, I would definitely say commonalities within illnesses and take it from that point, because I think part of it is like a specialty. You know, there's really no branding an illness with a name to keep it within a drug is not the way to go with the body. The body doesn't know that that's how it's branded. You know, that doesn't know that's its tattoo. And so it's a whole mechanism of everything does interrelate and everything does get back to what do you put into your body, what's in the atmosphere, how are you going to handle those toxins within your body. And every one of them will cause inflammation. The wrong ones will cause inflammation and problems. And then we just found a new thing, which we started talking about last week with Dr. Dantini, which are the allergies, intolerances, and delayed food sensitivities. And what the discovery with this is and how all these relate is if you repeat the same food over and over and over again, your body builds up defenses. And you're putting the same chemicals in over and over and over. It kicks up a response of antigens and antibodies within your system that create inflammation and create a lot of other problems. Now you say, well, I don't eat the same thing every day. If you go to the supermarket, every single, on 99% of everything has corn in it. Even if you go to get an IV in a hospital, it has high fructose corn syrup in it, GMO. Every day you are taking in, even with the MSG, you are taking in corn every single day, every time you open a package. So you are causing within yourself an illness, if not today, it may be a delay, but you will have inflammation and you will definitely have an illness in your future. So yes, they all connect and they all relate, and the only way that you can stop it is by completely going organic, by creating a diet that will work with your system, not my system, not Manny's system, but your own personal system, as to, I eat something today, I get sick tomorrow. I eat something today, I consistently ate it 2 days in a row, I'm sick 3 days later. I mean, it's like a pattern that you will start seeing that, yes, you will have maybe just, you know, you might have an achy bone today, but that achy bone may turn into a heart attack tomorrow. I mean, and they all connect, every single one of them, Simon. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, it does. And I have a follow-up question, if you will. Is there a hereditary factor here? Are some people more prone than others?
Absolutely. And what happens is every person has their own personal genetic DNA makeup, and we all know that.
The word is predisposition. So
no, I wasn't going to go there.
Okay.
Let me handle this first, and then you're. Then I love you. That would be great.
You know, I really feel like my husband.
No, go ahead, Annie. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Annie.
You go ahead. So every person has different DNA and different genetics, but it's what awakens that particular gene in a person, and it may be something that they've taken in from a toxin that then irritates that gene, that awakens that gene. Okay, honey.
No, that's fine. You got it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, Simon, it's back to you.
Okay. I'm going to ask an incredibly unfair question, as I don't believe we've discussed it at all before, but it's one that hits close to home, headaches. Now, I have to admit that the last one I had was on the morning after my 40th birthday party.
Oh, come on. There you go. I think we've all had those.
Right. I'm pretty sure I can figure out the cause for that one. I had a very long conversation the evening before with a guy by the name of Mr. Weiser, Bud to his friends. Jan, on the other hand, suffers from them regularly, and they can last for days. Is there a correlation between food and headaches?
Yes, there is. A headache is a symptom. If you're having headaches, that means there's something else you should be concerned with. Exactly what can only be determined by looking longer and deeper into your health. First of all, we're back to foods again. So many people suffer migraine headaches and other headaches because of the food. So perhaps there's a particular food allergy she has, and she has to take a look at what she eats. This is what Ashley describes as food challenges from environmental medicine. Basically, Jan and anyone else who's suffering headaches should first take a look at the different things they're eating and start excluding them. If you like hamburgers, for example, and eating fast food burgers, give up that brand of burger for a few days to see if your headache goes away. If you just bought a new type of potato chip you want to taste or you like, give it up for a while. Somewhere in these choices of foods is something that's aggravating that her health and causing her to basically have headaches. And, of course, that answer could be far more serious. For some people, it's a harbinger of something far worse than just a food challenge or a food allergy. But generally, the very first response is the headaches are because of something you eat, not because of what happens at work.
And the best way to actually pinpoint, for me, I discover with Manny, and for myself, because I have, like, it's Manny's diet and enzyme formula, and I have Ashley's diet and enzyme formula, and everybody who makes this diet creates their own Like it would be Jan's diet and enzyme formula. They would she would create her own. And what you do is you what you would do is you start off by today, if she writes down everything she has, and along with it, now this is a pain in the tail to do in the beginning, write down the ingredients that were in that package that are in the food. And every day, if she does that, as pain in the tail as it is, she will discover the similarities of the same ingredients and the same foods that are causing her to have the headache. And it goes across the board. It doesn't just have to be a headache. It could be the gout. It could be the Crohn's kicking up. It could be the inflammation causing arthritis. The same charting every single day. And you'll see it. It could be like, I ate this today. 3 days later, I had that. And over a course of month and months, you will see a complete pattern that will allow you to see what's making your body sick.
And we've been reading books by Daniel Dantini, a noted a specialist who's now in Florida who specializes in delayed sensitivities. And he talks about how if you do have a food that you're sensitive to, you actually become insensitive to it, namely your body reacts in a different way. So what happens is people are often attracted to the foods that make them feel the worst. So it's quite possible for a lot of these people that they have an allergy to a particular food, and that allergy after a period of time makes them crave that food even more. It's sort of a sick joke that our bodies play out.
And it's toxic. It's a very your body becomes it becomes toxic to your body. And subsequently, and again, like Vanny said, it's a really weird joke. It's a sick joke on us. You know, talking about sickness, your body starts craving this thing that is very toxic. And I think part of it is because of the antibodies and the antigens that are built up. We'd love to have Dr. Dantini and all of us get together if we could on one of the shows.
I would love that. I'm going to be asking you folks off air, you know, for more information, and I'll see if I can get him to join us.
Oh, that'd be great.
We'll be happy to advance that for you.
I'm going to continue on the headache quest just for a second.
Okay.
And again, it's a hereditary issue. Jan has a 19-year-old son. He has headaches on a more regular basis than I would have normally expected.
Well, you know, when you think of hereditary, one of the things that we've gone into in our next book, which we're getting off to working with the editor and getting off to the publisher, is it's called It's Not Your Fault, and it's on weight gain, obesity, and addiction. And we go back into actually where addictions and problems within people start, which is actually in the fetus. Now, Jan was eating certain things when she was carrying her son that will create DNA things that happen that are changes, altering. So he may have the same identical genetic. Go ahead, Manny.
Yeah. Well, besides on the genetic base, the fact is he may have similar allergies because sometimes allergies are passed on within families, even asthma in some families. So the end result is that he may have a predisposition towards an allergy with a particular food, and he eats that food because since Jan never really understood or no one's really talked
to her. No one tells anybody
that. Yeah, right.
This is something we're advancing.
Right. So basically, and Dr. Dantini and a few leading specialists now, but the fact is that people don't know they have this issue, so they just don't say anything to their children. And if Jan knew for one way or another whether this were truly the issue with her, she'd certainly tell her children and say to her children, hey, you shouldn't do this. But the fact is, since they don't know, the children grow up and no one tells them, they don't have any more knowledge than the parent, and they just continue the custom because to a great extent, children get used to eating what their parents give them, so as they get older, they, unless they really strike away from their parents, tend to eat a very similar diet.
Plus the fact, in my book, this is how I also view this, when you realize that in the early 90s, biotech was advancing, putting GMO and all this excitotoxin. Excitotoxins are the worst for the headaches. I mean, they're the hidden MSG in the food that we've talked about. And they're made from crap vegetables with a vat of acid. Remember I described that, that it's a vat. They put it in the vat with acid. Mm-hmm. They skim off the top, and you're getting this MSG crap in your food, which is an excitotoxin that absolutely causes headaches. It causes headaches. Aspartate causes headaches, which is in a lot of foods. So it's actually the ingredients that have been available since Jan was pregnant. So when you take back the time, you go, what were they advancing at that time in the food? When she was pregnant and carrying your son, that was being advanced, which meant that while she was carrying him in the womb, he was actually getting those, which makes him even more sensitive. Now, again, this is, again, one of our theories, but we've also taken this based on scientific data that we've read. So it's to me, I think if he has the same identical headaches, the one thing that may help him, Simon, and it's actually kind of a fun thing, I think, for a family, because Manny had me doing it. We were doing it together, which was creating this daily chart on all the ingredients we were putting in. We actually started making jokes of it, and it also taught us about the foods and all the ingredients that were in the foods. That was making him sick, that was making me sick. And it was in each one of us individually because our genes and genetics are different. But bottom line is the MSG was making both of us sick.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, and I could definitely see that as a contributing factor. Your books basically advocate a lifestyle change, but few people are very good at the cold turkey approach to change. Most people do better taking little baby steps. Where would you recommend that someone start?
Well, I think that you have to address the cold turkey effect, but not necessarily within the framework that you offer. You cannot give everything up tomorrow in life. It just doesn't work that way. What you need to do is start selecting areas. Pick a subject. I think MSG is right at the top of this list. Okay, and on the MSG issue, the issue gets very simple. You just look for any product that has MSG or any one of the various things that comprise MSG. In the back of one of our books, the other book has a list of every product with MSG. This book has every product that has
the ones coming out of Thanksgiving.
Fructose corn syrup. So take a look at it, or else go on online and create your list. But we prefer you buy our book. But if not, you can find it yourself. And basically look them up and start deciding, okay, I'm going to give up all of this, and then I'm going to give up all of that. But you just don't give it up. You replace it. Our theory is, I'll give you an example. We did some research today on burgers. If you have one of the really big burgers with bacon and cheese on it, and you're looking at, 2,500 plus grams of salt and almost an equal amount of fat a day, you're looking at with an order of fries, it gets up to about 4,500 milligrams of salt and MSG, sugar, the whole number. Well, you know, if you replace that and make an organic burger at home using the same things, if you like bacon, use organic bacon. If you like cheese on it, use the natural cheeses on it. So at the end of the day, you're having the same burger that's got 4,500 milligrams of salt at home with no salt, except perhaps the salt that's in the bun and some natural salt. So at the end of the day, just you're changing food. So you're not going cold turkey like a diet that says, I'm giving up everything and I'm going to do all of this. No, what you're giving up is the crap and you're switching over to something that tastes good. So to that extent, if that's giving it up, I gave it up willingly because I'll tell you what, the first time I started making organic burgers, I looked at myself and said, why didn't I do this sooner? Because they just tasted 1,000% better. And like you, not so much you, I have a friend who's who loves Carl's Jr., which was one of my favorite of all the fast food burgers.
was your favorite? Now that we know the truth about it.
Well, it's more than the truth.
The ammonia burger.
The truth is that now when I have a and every once in a while I'm stuck out and I do have a fast food burger and I prefer Carl's because it's grilled. It's on a. The grill as opposed to being on a griddle. Where
and never in my presence, Simon. He will not do this in my presence.
usually you're not around.
Yeah, there you go.
So, but anyway, make a long story short, it's been about 2 months since I've done this, and it tasted horrible to me. And I'm sorry, Carl's Jr. I thought you had a great-tasting burger, but after eating organic ones, I found myself saying, I don't want to eat this junk. It just doesn't taste good. So there are a lot of motivations for change. One, we're all being cheated. We're basically eating junk.
And the biggest problem, too, one of the many biggest problems, not only with the hidden MSG and the glutamates or the aspartame and the various ingredients that they're putting in there that are exciting our brain cells to death, you're killing your brain cells with it, is the fact that it's just all the chemicals that are in it are just so bad for you that you just can't eat any of it.
Well, but getting past that, the first reason is we're all being cheated. The quality of food sucks.
Oh, that's where I was going with that, Manny. The fact that the GMO factory farm and the GMO are only 50% of the nutrients. You're only getting 50% of the nutrients.
Actually, less. A lot of recent tests show that 80% of the nutrients are gone. So basically, people who eat this large burger, fries, et cetera, are getting less nutrients than someone might out of a simple grilled cheese sandwich, which is not the healthiest thing in the world. So at the end of the day, one of these reasons that people are so hungry is the fact that the contents are as addicting as heroin. But the second reason is because they're not getting anything nutritious out of it either. So at the end of the day, we're eating a bunch of crap that doesn't make that doesn't taste good, doesn't make our health better, and doesn't contain anything of any value. And at the end of the day, I think that's about as good a reason to change the food you eat as anything. But again, don't give it up. Change it.
Oh, and so to make up for the lack of nutrients, people say, well, you know, let me go take some vitamins. So you go to the grocery store where you get your GMO stuff. And you buy your vitamins that some of them contain GMO, in addition to the fact that some of them contain high fructose corn syrup, but also they are synthetic, which means that your body cannot even utilize 50% or less of that nutrient is all that you're getting. So you're already lacking nutrients from your food, and then you're taking a synthetic vitamin that is proven that your body can't utilize. And so you think you're doing all this healthy stuff, and you're not. And you think you're saving money, and you're not, because you're not getting your full money. You're not getting full bang for your buck, and your body knows it. And it shows up in headaches. It shows up in arthritis and other future illnesses.
Okay. I want to break to a shameless commercial opportunity. You've mentioned your books a couple of times. Where can people buy them?
Well, they're available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and basically booksellers all around the world. There are 39 major Internet booksellers. Some small stores stock them, but we're not sure right now how many or where they are. At the end of the day, you can also go to our website, which is howtoeliminatepain.com. And you can locate them there, or mannysdietbook.com, and you can buy them from us. And the titles of the book are Arthritis, Inflammation, Gout, Crohn's, IBD, and IBS. But this book goes far beyond those illnesses because almost every illness from diabetes down the line causes some form of arthritis. So the book's designed to cover all sorts of areas. Our second book, which is Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula, Change Your Lifestyle, Designed for Everyone, is sort of the remedy for it. When you read the arthritis book and determine what are the 101 different forms of arthritis you have and how to deal with it, this gives you a choice. And the book tells you gives you a vitamin formula, an enzyme formula, which will allow you to counteract a lot of these foods coming in. It also gives you a diet that's a chemical-free diet. And there's about 30 pages of organic remedies that are chemical-free. And they're all great. I gave some to Simon, and one of them appears right now on his website.
You mean the recipes?
The recipes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And the recipes, in fact, we'll give one today by the end of the show, too. And you'll find that these are really delicious, and they're better than eating it. And recently, our editor of our most recent book was here to talk about our book, and we served her an organic lunch full of spaghetti and sausage, meatballs, all organic. And all she could do is rave about how much better they tasted than anything she'd ever had.
She keeps inviting herself back, by the way, Simon.
Yeah. no shame, believe
yeah,
me.
Shamelessly. All our friends, shameless.
So Barbara, if you're listening, it's okay. You can come back.
You can come back.
but at the same time, she called me up one day and said, gee, you know, I've been telling my friends how incredible it is. I'm just so surprised because people expect organic foods to taste like cardboard, and they don't. The truth is the non-organic foods are the ones that taste like cardboard. So if you want to improve your food and your meals, then you switch over. It also get rid of headaches. The only time I ever get headaches is when I spend 12 hours of the day editing one of our books, and usually that takes about 2 or 3 days in a row to start doing it to me. And when I practice law, believe me, 4 or 5 in the afternoon, of course, there could have been other reasons, but I was struggling with headaches because that's a problem that goes with the industry. It's just so much reading, so much stress all the time. Anyway, the bottom line to this story is if you eat foods that have all the natural ingredients that you want, you are not hungry, you will not gain weight, you will not have health problems, and you enjoy your meals far better, and you don't have to deal with headaches. And by the way, some of these prescription drugs, their side effects are headaches. They don't tell you that. You have to read the fine print.
Oh, that's true too. So she could be she could be just toxic right now from side effects of drug on drug plus the MSG with, you know, I never thought I would be a big advocate of homeopathic medicine with doctors, and I don't, you know, homeopathic just means looking at the body as a whole and how do you get it balanced, and I don't know how it became a dirty word, but it's one of the discussions we do in the book on it became a dirty word, you know, it's like if you're not doing, you know, this way of thinking, then you must be off the beaten track somewhere. Well, if we didn't go off the beaten track, we would both be dead right now, literally. And you know, Simon, and I think homeopathy might also be the way to go with her, too, you know, finding a really good medical doctor who understands both.
Indeed. I'm going to spring another quick surprise on you.
Okay.
Just because I like it. It's okay.
You are a bugger.
Yeah. But I think it's something that we should make part of this weekly broadcast, and I'm calling it the Bad Boy Food of the Week. It's a new feature. I'm going to start the ball rolling. KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, have an artery-clogging burger that has no bread. It's called the Double Down. It's two fillets of, or fillets, as the Americans would say, of deep-fried chicken and a generous amount of melted Franken cheese in the middle. This bad boy... This bad boy clocks in at 540 calories, 32 grams of fat, and wait for this, 1,380 milligrams of sodium.
Right.
But,
well, let's throw one more in.
It's not over.
Okay.
All right. They offer a grilled version You know, you'd think, okay, well, grilled chicken, that's got to be better for you. But this one, mysteriously, is just as bad and has yet more sodium. All right? It has 460 calories, only 23 grams of fat, but 1,430 milligrams of sodium.
And that doesn't include MSG and all the other ones.
That's
regular sodium, table salt, which we know is not good for you anyway. Let me throw something in. The KFC chicken and biscuit bowl has got 2,400 milligrams of salt in it. And the KFC's original recipe, a simple five-piece, has 1,000 milligrams without all the other stuff you've thrown in salt. And I haven't even got to the big boys, the burgers yet.
But, you know, I read this and I went, oh my, you know, we're told that chicken's good for you. Suddenly chicken doesn't look so good.
Wait a second, okay.
No, and you also have to understand, all these franchises buy their chicken from Tyson Foods, and they pump up their chicken with 15% salt brine and MSG in it. So before they throw the chicken into the grill, it's got 15% more salt, but we don't know how much it is, so because Tyson doesn't really give that number. So besides the number you just gave us, you have to multiply that by the amount of salt put in by Tyson Foods and their chickens that they sell to McDonald's, KFC, all these other chains.
Plus the fact, no one talks about where does the chicken come from. It comes from a factory farm, which means it's on this crowded, smelly, dirty, filthy, full of, you know, excrement. And then, of course, they're pumped with their feet has actually got antibiotics in it. So you've got this genetically modified food that's actually fed to them, and that's going to be part of the meat itself, which means you're getting corn, more of the GMO corn that you're getting, even without even, you know, and you don't know how much of that's going on the covering of the Kentucky Fried Chicken. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, you know, we could go on forever with what's in it. The real question is, and I don't eat it, I haven't had any KFC. I actually bought it once. We're in the middle of moving 13 years ago. It made me so ill. It had been 10 years, and I haven't eaten it since. But for those of you who do eat it, the real test is if you buy it for dinner, bring it home, shut all the lights off in the house, just make sure it's dark, and let's all find out whether it glows in the dark. This is almost like a movie with a nuclear product that, you know, that throbs. If Spielberg made this movie of Kentucky Fried Chicken, it would glow in the dark.
Okay, I've had my rant for the week. So, you know, I think we should move on to the Barling and Brooks rant of the week.
Okay, can I?
You know, this is where I throw the raw meat in the room full of starving pit bulls, slam the door, and head for the hills.
I selected a couple of those today because we don't want to overwhelm the audience with stuff. And let's start with a Krispy Kreme donut. That has 60 ingredients in one donut. You know, when you look at the thing, it's hard to figure out how 60 things can go into that little donut.
You should
really
see the list, Simon.
It's just unbelievable. But they claim they only have 15 grams of sugar in each donut, in a glazed donut. But when you read their site and you break it down, it's only 15 grams in the raw donut. But the donut also contains five forms of high fructose corn syrup, maltodextrin, corn syrup solids, dextrose, which, of course, aren't included in the sugar label. So they could have, each one could be another 15 grams, and that easily could be 50, 60 grams of fat. But
sugar,
what they don't, sugar, excuse me. But what they don't say is the glaze also contains powdered sugar and sugar and dextrose, and that probably has its own 50 or 60 grams. But the way they do it, because of the way the laws, but they don't have to disclose all of the sugar. And when you look at it, we talked a lot about it in MSG, and I'm just going to highlight some of these things. Partially hydrogenated soybean and cottonseed oil. In a donut, those both are ways to hide MSG. Soy flour, another MSG. First of all, it's genetically modified soil with MSG in it. Egg yolks, well, those come from factory farms like Wright County in Iowa, and those are from chickens that are genetically modified. They're wallowing in manure and have high levels of salmonella. Yeast, another hidden MSG, okay? Yeast nutrients, whatever that means, they call it calcium sulfate and ammonium sulfate, so it's ammonium MSG and some phony form of yeast. And then they say dough conditioners. Dough conditioners? Geez, is that like a hair conditioner? Calcium dioxide?
I always thought a dough conditioner was a damp cloth that you put
right
over the dough.
Right, to make it come together and knead it. Well, their dough conditioners are calcium dioxide, monocalcium, and dicalcium phosphate. Okay, then it goes on with five other names that we all, they're all on our list of MSG holders. So they've got probably 10 ingredients so far that have MSG. Then they go to monodiglycerates. Oh, wow, listen, MSG, both of them. And then five other things, including malted barley flour, all MSG. And then we have Simon's favorite, natural and artificial flowers, flavors.
Flavorings.
They're both MSG hiding. Then sodium caseinate, definite MSG, and high fructose corn syrup, corn maltodextrin. That's just sugar, plain and simple. Corn syrup solids, plain sugar. Then BHT, I won't even get into that. They do that to help protect flavor. That's a simple preservative, okay? Then they go, oh, the glazed, this is separate. The glazed contains sugar, corn syrup, calcium carbonate, calcium sulfate, you know, agar, dextrose, locust bean gum, disodium phosphate, sorbitan, monosterate, mono and diglycerates, artificial color, and, of course, salt. Well, I mean, that's on the glaze, so every time you look at that glazed donut...
It's just the glaze, not the donut.
Just the glaze. The glaze has 15 ingredients.
50.
No, the glaze takes 15, the one takes 50. When I was a kid, you know, I work in restaurants, guys made donuts. Glazed donuts used to consist of powdered sugar, some water, you put it on, and it dries, and it takes the effect of the glaze. Well, Jesus, take 14 more ingredients to glaze sugar?
They want to make sure you get enough MSG to excite your brain to want more.
And now for my favorite, Jell-O. So every time you go in the hospital, you have Jell-O, and every time you give a child Jell-O, this is Jell-O used to be gelatin and water when I was a kid. And now they put in a gelling agent called adiptic acid. By the way, that's used to make nylons. You know, so
your Jell-O has stuff to make nylons.
So
okay.
I guess they take old nylons and recycle them and put them in your Jell-O. I'm not sure. anyway, that's a joke, really. Disodium phosphate, which is an anti-caking agent.
Which has
among things that has MSG, for example. It has high levels of phosphate, which is not particularly healthy. And then they mix it with maltodextrin, more sugar. Formic acid, which is nothing more than trying to keep the flavor of the Jell-O from being acidic. Then they put a form of potassium called acetosulfame potassium. Sounds healthy, doesn't it? No, it's synthetic corn syrup sweetener from high fructose corn syrup. And then they put, after putting all the sugar in it, they try to fool you and go, under 2% of aspartame. I guess that makes it sound like it's dietetic while they're stuffing you full of corn syrup and the rest of it. So, you know, here's somebody laying in the hospital on an IV, which incidentally is high fructose corn syrup, and they're now eating Jell-O, which is high fructose corn syrup and all these other additives, and look what it does to them. And while we're on high fructose corn syrup and dextrose, would you believe someone after surgery is getting 10% dextrose 4 made of high fructose corn syrup is basically getting the equivalent of at least 3 Coca-Colas a day. So, you know, if you sat in the hospital and your wife or girlfriend brought you a regular Coke or Pepsi, the doctor or nurse would go, oh, take that away from me, just had surgery. Well, gee, you know, what's the difference? You're getting it shoved up your vein anyway. So they could take a Coca-Cola, put it into an IV, shove it in your vein, and the only difference would be the, you know, the basic MSG and other flavorizers, because they're pumping the same thing into you. So Dr. Dantini, for example, was telling us that he found all of his patients having allergies, arrhythmia, especially children, and it took him a while to realize it was the high fructose corn syrup.
Because nobody told him. Nobody told the medical profession.
Yeah.
They switched. They did a switch on the intravenous.
So the doctor didn't know, and when he figured out that's why all of his patients were in danger, he took them off, and then all these post-operative problems went away because they weren't consuming, you know, high fructose
GMO.
GMO, high fructose corn syrup. Now for the fun part. Simon, I started researching this form of dextrose for IVs. Do you know you can buy it in 2 to 25-pound powdered bags? You read them and you think they're selling, you know, cocaine powder. It's just ridiculous. Pharmaceutical-grade high fructose corn syrup. Well, pharmaceutical-grade cocaine. What's the difference between the two? Then they're saying, they're putting on bodybuilding sites saying, oh, it's good for you if you work out. It's like taking a steroid. Makes your body bigger. Well, that confirms our suspicions in all these articles that high fructose corn syrup makes you gain weight. And then they have the nerve on all these sites to say, oh, you can use instead of sugar. So for those listeners who really want to kill themselves, they can just go buy a 25-pound bag of high fructose, you know, powdered corn syrup and put it in their sugar container and serve it every day with their food. And they say it tastes good. Oh, it's good for you before you work out, during you work out, and after you work out. So here you got a child, you know, and shoveling in high fructose corn syrup who could easily, on the recommendation of the manufacturer, pull the sugar out of the bowl, but it's not sugar, it's high fructose corn syrup dextrose, sprinkle it on their breakfast, or get a little hot milk or chocolate milk or something.
Which has high fructose corn syrup in it.
So at the end of the day, life, you know, there was a quote in our book, I forget who the scientist was, said we're all corn chips walking. And to a great extent, we're also all corn chips in our fluids in our bodies now, too.
And two things I'd like to do to get back on is one of my favorite quotes that we found this week is from a medical professional in Ohio who said, anybody, because it's anti-GMO month, so I want to go back to that a little bit, the fact that they, if anybody who is plugging GMO, they either don't know any better or they're stupid. And on that note, if anybody goes to Dr. Oz's site that everybody's respecting right now, who I respect as a medical doctor, he put on a medical professional who's out there promoting right now, saying that there is no difference between GMO and regular food or natural food, your organic food. It's all the same. And don't worry about this horrible antibiotic that's not that he says that, but we're saying it, that this horrible artificial antibiotic, don't worry about any of it. So then I wanted to go back to, you know, one of the things that we were researching this week with the BT corn, which goes into your high fructose corn syrup. Now, we were talking earlier about genetics. Isn't it in the genes? And we all know the importance of genes. What the only explanation that we could find with how they're making GMO high fructose BT corn, which is your high fructose syrup, is taking the gene, splicing the gene with a BT toxin, which is highly toxic. This becomes part of every encoding gene genetic part of that plant. So you are actually, and what it does is when the worm or caterpillar that bites into this, it splits the gut or the intestine of that animal up just by one little bite. Now you're eating that plant that is genetically modified, that's going into your medicines, going into everything you have, and that genetically modified organism is part of the gene of that plant that you're eating, that vegetable, that fruit, that corn, that papaya, every single thing has part of its genetic coding BT toxin that split open the caterpillar's gut.
Yeah.
And then when you test it, you find out, and especially with soy. Soy destroys the liver cells, the pancreas. Testicles on the animals become blue. I mean, it destroys the metabolism.
You know, and it makes us wonder who paid for this guy to be on this show. He's an industry honk. I bet you if you said, and we tried to trace him down. He went to an obscure school outside of Seattle and basically is not a medical doctor who's now pumping up GMOs. So I want to know who pays him. I think it's time for him to disclose where his grants, where his money comes from, because he's obviously paid by the industry. About Dr. Oz, personally, I lost respect for him when I found out that if any of our listeners goes to his site or asks for information or goes to his newsletter or participates, he sells their name and information to a drug company, which I consider despicable. So he's selling and making money off of your participation in his health site. So what's happened to him? He's been overcome by the same greed, because greed and absolute power corrupt. And now he's become just another commercial spokesman for the industry, sadly. And that's a shame, because I had great respect for him until he sold out to the dark side.
I still have respect for him. And the problem I have, though, is that this dear friend of ours has been trying to help her friends coming up from Guatemala and South America maintain their health. El Salvador. And her whole thing is trying to help people to help them with their health. Realize that you got to stay with the organic foods we were eating at home. These GMOs are bad. And they all watched Dr. Oz, and they all said, you know, you don't know anything about what you're talking about. And this high fructose corn syrup and the GMO is all good for me. So that was bothersome to me. That was my rant for the week.
I think you both did very well.
Okay.
You know, rant I may, rant I must.
Right. Manny, you were talking about, you know, people selling email addresses to companies. I actually do the reverse. I threaten to let the people have your, you know, email address, and that they send me money not to.
Hey, if it works, I'll split it.
Yeah, fine. Fine with me.
Okay. We did this last week, and I'd like to do it again this week. The recipe. We're dealing with the family of four. What would you recommend?
In fact, this goes back to our substitute good foods for bad foods. This is my sausage and chicken mixed grill, and you can do it on the grill, you can do it in an oven, you can do it on the stovetop. And all of these are organic agreements, and I'm going to name some brands. If you like sausages, Applegate and others make natural sausages, and where you live, you may even have natural sausage makers, people who take great pride in it. So find natural sausages either in a store or, you know, at a local Packers. So you buy Applegate Organic, you can get the Andouille chicken and turkey sausage, or you can get the simple chicken and turkey sausage, depending upon how spicy you want. I actually bought a spicy one. I had a bite or two, and oh boy. So you take a pack or two, depending on how much your family eats, and you boil them for 7 minutes and poach them. Or if you're grilling, you put them in the corner of the grill away from the fire and just let them heat up until they cook. You sprinkle just a touch of white pepper if you want some seasoning in the water if you're boiling it, and just a pinch of it, a light sprinkle if you're going to grill it. So once you let it grill, at the same time, what you're cooking primarily are chickens. So you get four boneless and skinless chicken breasts.
Organic.
Everything's organic, Ashley.
Okay.
Take four boneless and skinless chicken breasts or thighs. And if you want the skin, keep the skin. That's a personal preference. You sprinkle just a touch of white pepper, a touch of curry, and no more than a teaspoon of your favorite New Orleans spice, salt-free Tony's or Fat Boys. We talked about Tony's. I remembered why I stopped eating it, because the regular Tony's has so much salt and MSG in it that I couldn't eat it. The salt-free is great. So you sprinkle, I mean, we're talking about just lightly, because too much will make it really spicy. So you grill it on the chicken. It takes no more than about 8 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes on each side. If they're skinless, they cook even quicker. If they have skin, you got to be careful. Or you can grill them the same way. As you grill them, use real butter, none of that margarine or oil junk. use real butter, preferably organic country butter, and saute them. And if you're going to smoke them, we suggest alder, cherry, or pecan wood chips for the best flavor. I'm sure that down there everybody's got their favorite wood flavor. So after they're cooked, you cut the sausage into one-inch slices if it's really spicy. If it's not, if they're not spicy ones, you can serve them whatever you want. And if you mix the sausage with the chicken, then, of course, the two of them have a combined. So you can serve them separately in a bowl and let everyone pick their preference. Or you can cut the sausage into anywhere from 1 to 2-inch slices and allow them to pick up a piece of chicken breast and sausage and eat them in smaller sizes. And you can cook either organic baked potatoes, which you can throw in the oven. What we do is throw 5 or 6 of them in the oven, cook them, and then throw them in the refrigerator and pull them out and either cut them up in small pieces, chop them up and put a little organic butter on them and heat them up in the microwave so you don't have to spend a lot of time cooking. So on a Sunday, while you're busy doing something else, bake a half a dozen baked potatoes from the refrigerator. So whenever you cook this meal, which is less than an hour, you don't have to worry about your baked potatoes being ready. You can pull them out, cut them up, and warm them in the microwave. Or you can make an organic salad or organic corn on the cob or whatever your favorite organic vegetable is. For some people, they may prefer to serve it with organic bread. Others may prefer to take organic bread and put the chicken and then butterfly the sausage on top and make a chicken and sausage sandwich on organic bread. That's the point. Once you cook this, you can make a salad. You can chop your chicken up and your sausage up, throw it on a salad.
Organic pasta.
Or you can throw it on organic pasta, so you can make a pasta dish, a chicken dish, a sandwich dish, or you can serve it straight up with potatoes and vegetables. You can do, if you cook the potatoes in advance, you can do all that in under an hour. Yesterday, in 35 minutes, I cooked sausage like this. I cooked 4 chicken breasts on the grill. I cooked a whole Pacific Snapper stuff.
Oh, next week we'll give you that recipe. Oh, it's killer.
Stuff with sage, natural sage, and rosemary from our garden. And I cooked that over in the side. You just leave it there and turn it over and ignore it, let it smoke. And I think I cooked something else, honey. I don't remember what it was. And so I actually had a choice of grills. So we had mixed grill for lunch, mixed grill for dinner, and we have leftovers that we're going to eat when we're done with the show. So one cooking like that can cover 2 or 3 meals, so you only have to cook every couple of days if you cook these in combination. So, Simon, do you like that?
I do. I'm going to tell Jan to rush out to the store and, you know, pick up some stuff, and we've got dinner.
And you know, Simon, it's not a compromise, is it?
No, absolutely not. And I have to admit that that is one of the things that I do enjoy about your recipes. They are not compromised. It's not a question of giving up. It's a question of finding replacements.
Right, just changing habits, nothing more.
And you get more nutrition from it. I mean, there's a lot more nutritional value in that.
Right. In fact, Jen's packing her bags right now. We should be with you shortly.
I can't wait.
and I have a thought for everybody in the audience. If you would like our email address from Simon, send it for him. And if you have a meal that you really love, send it to me, and I will send you an organic version back of that same meal that you can eat and be healthy with without
eating all the time. With brands. I'll research the brands.
And we'll even give you brands that you can buy. And if you can't find these brands locally, look them up on the Internet. They'll ship to you. Some of them ship it to you cheaper than what you're paying for it in the stores. So, and that was the case with Fat Boy, which we ordered out of New Orleans this seasoning, is about $1 a bottle cheaper than we would pay in the market. So it's like everything else in life. If you know how to shop, you can get it at the price you want to pay, right, Simon? You don't have to pay too much.
Absolutely. I really like that idea. I'm going to make sure that I mention it in the article. Yeah, send a recipe.
We'll
find that would be great.
Right.
And in the meantime, when you check your email, you're going to have a recipe sitting there for sausage and chicken grill.
All righty. Alas, our time is up. And once again, I didn't even get to half of the subjects that I wanted to talk about.
Neither did we.
Right. I mean, I really do want to grumble some more about product labeling, but I guess that's just going to have to wait till next week.
Oh, I look forward to it, Simon.
And, Simon, I can't wait to talk to you about RDAs, recommended daily oils.
Oh, that's a subject in itself.
So, ladies
and
gentlemen, come back
exactly.
Next week, and we are going to talk to you about all those little things you see in the label as recommended daily dosages. They are interesting.
Very interesting.
Okay. I think I mentioned it in an article. I quoted from the Frito-Lay advert, who can eat just one,
yep.
But I changed it to who can eat just one portion.
That's right, without falling over in the future.
Yeah, and by the way, a serving of Lay's potato chips, who did the original ad, Phil Carey did it, basically contains about 2,500. If you have a half a bag of chips watching a football game, you're getting about 2,600 milligrams of salt, or 2,600 grams of salt. Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, I'm going to run out right now and get me a bag.
Yeah, only if you're working on that heart attack. I mean, seriously, it's horrible. So.
Okay, our time is up. I'm being nagged by my automated producer. I do want to thank you both for taking time out to spend with me today.
Well, we had a great time.
We had a great time. And Simon, a special hello to Joe and Kindred and to our friends in Louisiana. We have not forgotten them, and I just want to let them know that they are still very much in our thoughts and prayers and trying to find answers for them.
I do plan on inviting them back at some point. In fact, about 10 minutes before we went on air, I received a very, very interesting link. I'll send it to you. It's about a medical term I've never heard of. It's called tilt. Have you come across it?
No.
Not yet, but I will.
Oh, yeah, you bet you will.
Uh-oh.
Okay, until next week, I really want to thank you.
You're welcome.
And
thank you.
We will talk again next Saturday.
Looking forward to it, Simon. And thank you to the listeners.
Okay, bye.
Bye.